In the matter of Corey Corbo and Union City Police Department, may we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. Andrew Gimiano of O'Toole Scrivo on behalf of the petitioner, Union City Police Department.
Juan Fernandez, also on behalf of the petitioner, Union City Police Department.
Good morning, distinguished justices. Joshua Forsman, Caruso, Smith, Piccini on behalf of Officer Corbo.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Justice LaVecchia will be participating in this argument and the other arguments this morning after watching the video. In this case, the court will be granting Union City's motion for a stay of the appellate division ruling. An order will follow. There's no need to discuss that during the course of argument. Mr. Gimignano.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if necessary.
That's fine.
Thank you. The city's petition brings a matter of significant public importance and public safety before the court: illegal drug use by a sworn law enforcement officer. Every police officer understands that an officer who uses illegal drugs is a threat to the public. Those are the words of this court. And the reason for that is simple. Police officers are not like other public employees. Police officers are given some of the most weighty and sensitive powers in our society. They have the power to use deadly force in justifiable circumstances. They're authorized to carry firearms, engage in high-speed chases with absolute immunity from suit. And they have the most awesome and dangerous power in a democratic state with respect to its citizens, the power to detain and arrest. In exchange for those powers, we hold law enforcement officers to a higher standard. They have a lesser expectation of privacy. We expect them to enforce the law and not violate it. Illegal drug use by a sworn law enforcement officer is such a serious issue that it's dealt with firmly and harshly. Law enforcement officers who test positive for illegal drugs are subject to mandatory termination and a permanent ban on law enforcement employment in the state of New Jersey. These matters are particularly acute in a municipality like Union City, geographically small, densely populated.
Counsel, isn't this case a question of process? You're not disputing that the city did not prove before the ALJ the charge, are you?
Yes, I'm disputing that.
You are disputing that.
There's a positive.
I thought you were just requesting a remand.
We were requesting a remand because we believe that the drug test could be considered as legally competent evidence under the business records hearsay exception. And the city's position is that there wasn't a fair decision on the merits of this.
So you're telling us the drug test would have been legally admissible in a court of law before the Superior Court?
As a business record exception to the hearsay rule.
Okay, tell us how you get there.
This is a drug test is a objective diagnostic test.
There are a couple of factors that you have to fulfill in order to get a business record in.
Three factors.
You're familiar with them, right?
Yes.
So tell us what they are and tell us how you fulfill them.
So the first factor would be that the business record is kept in the ordinary course of business.
Okay, who testified to that?
There was no testimony on that. That is not generally contested in matters where it's a medical record. Hospitals keep medical records in the ordinary course. Under State versus Martorelli, that's been held to not be a dispute. There's also the second exception.
Are you saying that your opponent was not contesting that?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Are you saying that your client was not contesting the admission of the medical records?
Well, the way that this case was presented, there were two pieces of evidence. There was a statement by a sworn law enforcement officer that Mr. Corbo used cocaine, and there was the drug test where he tested positive for cocaine. On the second day of the hearing, Mr. Corbo insisted that the administrative law judge make determinations on the admissibility of the drug test and the other sworn law enforcement officer's statement. On that day, she said, the statement by the law enforcement officer was going to be admissible under hearsay exceptions for statement against interest and excited utterance. So at that point, on day two, before the city had closed its case in chief, it understood that it had legally competent evidence and that the drug test could come in under the residuum rule.
Well, that's a different issue. You told us that the medical records come in as a business exception. Okay, so What's number two? Number two and number three. What are the
number two would be that the test, the act recorded is close in time. The record was made close in time to the act recorded. That's the second requirement. There's not been any dispute here about the timeliness of the record, but again, that could be, you know, cured with testimony on how the hospital maintains the records, processes drug tests, and when it records those records.
Can we agree that even if it meets 803C6, the three done on or about the time by someone authorized to do so in the regular course of business, that still hearsay within those records is not automatically admissible if that hearsay itself is inadmissible? For example, in a police report, statements from a witness may well not be admissible because there are no duty to be under oath. That's Sass versus Strzelecki.
Right, that goes
so
to
can we agree that here you need the whys and wherefores of a medical opinion, and that's not in the included in the business record exception?
Well, I think the hearsay within the hearsay question, I think, goes to the third issue, which is essentially trustworthiness and reliability. This is not a complex medical diagnosis. This is a standard objective test. It's a urine screen. There's either a positive result or a negative result.
But is it really the same? Because you could have a business record admitted, as Justice Fernandez-Mina was saying, you could have a business record admitted and meet all three of the components of the business records exception, and yet within it is the embedded hearsay, the more famous examples from the case law, or a doctor says something, a diagnostic statement, which finds its way into a medical record, and even though that medical record may come in as a whole, there still may be hearsay that raises an additional problem. So isn't it really two different, I'm not saying you lose on that, but isn't it really, are we really looking at two different analyses? One, whether you meet business records exception, and the other, how to deal with that embedded hearsay?
Well, ordinarily, the results of objective diagnostic tests are considered admissible. Here in this case, there is testimony in this case about the reliability of the test. And the expert testified that he did not contest the reliability for the determination of the presence of cocaine. So is the question of the hearsay within the hearsay? There is evidence in the record that
you're talking about. You think you're now arguing that the defense expert helped you, and are you claiming that he helped you get in your evidence?
Without
your calling an expert like under Matulowicz?
There was expert testimony in the record. We didn't put on a rebuttal expert because we had.
Did you put on expert testimony?
Did we need to?
I'm asking you a question.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to clarify the question.
Did you put on expert testimony?
No, we did not offer a rebuttal expert after Dr. Sasserstein testified.
Okay. Were you required to put on an expert without some sort of consent by your adversary to show the relative degrees of objectivity and subjectivity and the procedures for the test, the regularity with which these analyses are done? I'm just reading from State versus Matulowicz, which is one of our cases that gives you guidance on how to get in a drug test.
Well, Matulowicz, the issue in Matulowicz was slightly different than the issue here. In Matulowicz, first of all, that's a criminal case. The drug test was done for the purposes of prosecuting the defendant. Here, the drug test was done for the purposes of life-saving. The city didn't order the drug test in this case. So as it goes to trustworthiness, that is one of the factors, the purpose that the test for which the test was performed. And in Matulowicz, when we talk about trustworthiness, there was a test where the court said, we don't have anything in the record to determine whether or not this test is essentially trustworthy, methods, were there other ways that the testing could have been done. Here, this is the immunoassay test is one of the standards for drug testing. It's a common urine screen.
And where do we get that from, other than you telling us that?
Dr. Sasserstein.
Okay, the defense expert.
Well, it may be the defense expert, but it's still expert testimony that the ALJ could have considered. Considered that he said, I have no problem with the hospital doing this. This is what they do. This is what they do every day.
Tell me if I'm mistaken. Dr. Sasserstein, the defense expert, said that the court should not rely on the immunoassay test, that that's a preliminary test, and that once you find what you think is a trace of a drug, then you should be conducting the regular test in the ordinary course. Is that what he testified to, or am I mistaken?
He testified, he did testify to that, but we really have to look at the testimony as a whole to see what he was talking about. What he was talking about is a reasonable suspicion drug test, where the city orders in the police officer on reasonable suspicion for a drug test. That's not what happened here. What happened here is Mr. Corbo had a medical emergency. He was in the hospital for up to 10 days. He was unconscious for at least two. So by the time the city could have taken any action with respect to Mr. Corbo, there wouldn't have been no cocaine in his urine for them to test, to send him in for a reasonable suspicion drug test. They had information that he used cocaine based on the statement of another law enforcement officer, so they relied on the test that the hospital did. Dr. Saferstein talks about the test, and his concern is not reliability. His concern is specificity, meaning false positives. And when he testified about false positives, we have to look at what Mr. Corbo tested positive for. He tested positive for opiates, cocaine, and benzodiazepines. Opiates and benzodiazepines are groups of drugs.
Mr. Gimignano, you're not asking us to rule on the admissibility of the evidence now, are you?
I'm sorry?
You're not asking us to rule on the admissibility of the evidence now, are you? You're asking for a remand, I thought.
In our petition, we asked for a remand because that was the issue that the appellate division identified.
Right. There was no structural error below. Is that right?
There's no
structural error in the way this proceeding took place. You offered evidence, and the activist found there was an inadequate foundation for that. The judge allowed the evidence in over an objection. Are you asking to go back and make the fulsome presentation?
That was the relief that we sought in our petition.
When did that change to today?
That changed in September of last year when this court issued its opinion in In re Hendrickson. This case was decided at the appellate division under the appellate division's determination of In re Hendrickson that ALJs were due less deference. So we were bound by that when we petitioned. After we petitioned, the court issued its decision in Hendrickson and overturned the appellate division's decision and concluded that where we have a workable standard review on an issue, we shouldn't change that standard. And that's what happened here. Normally, evidentiary rulings are subject to an abuse of discretion standard. And that's not what was applied here.
But the problem you have here is that the evidence was not fully presented, and your argument is that you'd won already, so why present a lot of evidence? But the evidence was not fully presented with respect to the business records exception, and that was the reason why in your petition you were arguing for a remand so you had the opportunity to do that. Hendrickson obviously provides a clear standard of review, but even if the standard of review is, you know, as stated in Hendrickson, which I agree with you, it is, why does that change the problem you still have that you need an additional evidentiary presentation?
Well, Hendrickson doesn't affect the business record decision in the same way it affects some of the other decisions.
Are you saying, let me just see if I understand this, are you saying that post-Hendrickson you win even if the drug test is inadmissible?
Yes.
The standard is so deferential that even if there was an inadmissible drug test before the ALJ, the ALJ was within her discretion by considering that.
She could have, if with the abuse of discretion standard, giving deference to the fact findings of the ALJ, she could have found facts. What we presented to the administrative law judge was that Ms. Garcia's statement that Mr. Corbo used cocaine was a statement against interest. She's a sworn law enforcement officer. She's articulating knowledge to another law enforcement officer that she knows that a law enforcement officer used drugs. She has a duty to report crime. She has a duty to report to the chief of police.
Did you amend your petition? I have your petition.
We did not.
So your petition raises one issue before this court, and that is the remand. Am I mistaken about this?
No.
So why are we going through all of this issue that is not related to the matter on which you petitioned this court?
Let me say it another way. Are you sure you want to swing for the fences here?
I don't consider it swinging for the fences. I consider
why not argue the issue then?
We're looking at a case that came out after we petitioned. It's application.
Then you should have filed something with the court expanding. How about, you know, your adversary has a right of notice. You have a petition. He's responding to a petition, and you're raising a wholly new issue before the court without giving anyone notice that you're going to argue this point.
Again, we're applying precedent. This is exactly what happened in the appellate division. The case was briefed before the appellate division issued Henderson.
You're saying that based on the facts here, this court cannot find abuse of discretion and agree with the appellate division? Is that what you're saying? So that's why you're swinging for the fences, because you think that that's the only possible outcome here?
I think it's a possible outcome if the court considers the issue. If there's a concern about, I mean, my adversaries have the same amount of time.
Are you waiving your right to your petition to remand? So you want to, that's it? You're going all or nothing?
I'm not going all or nothing. No, I'm responding to a question about whether or not there's another issue.
Well,
when the Chief Justice asked,
you brought up a brand new issue that wasn't before us. So I'm asking, are you swinging for the fences and that's it, all or nothing?
No.
So
you're still asking for the remand?
No, we think... I mean,
Let me ask it. Are you still asking for the remand?
Yes.
And tell us why you should get one.
Remand's the ordinary course when there's an error that can be cured with admissibility of evidence that can be cured with additional testimony. The appellate division didn't say a single thing about the reliability, the trustworthiness of the test. All it said is there wasn't foundational testimony offered and that the administrative law judge didn't weigh the hearsay within the hearsay under the proper standard. Whether she weighed it under the proper standard is a separate issue, but if all that's required is foundational testimony to make this legally competent evidence, then a remand would be the appropriate course. We cited a significant amount of case law in our petition that stands for that proposition. In fact, my adversary said the single case that they cited in their appellate brief supports it. That was the NT case. There was a diagnosis about PTSD in an abused child, and there wasn't the 808 testimony, so the appellate division said the proper remedy here is remand it for a new fact hearing. Let's decide the case on the merits. That's what the city is ultimately asking for. This case should be decided on the merits. It's a basic principle in the administration of justice that we make sure that the fact findings are accurate.
Other questions? Anything you'd like to add?
Thank you.
Mr. Forsman.
Good morning, Justices. As Justice Albin put it initially, we're here solely to answer the one question presented, which should this matter be remanded to allow Union City basically get a second bite and try to establish foundational testimony to establish a hearsay exception for what our Dr. Sapstein has testified to is what's known as a scientifically unreliable or a screening test, not a confirmation test. The appellate division, was correct in their opinion, concluding that the medical records and Garcia's statement were inadmissible.
Two separate things, correct?
Correct, Judge.
And different analysis for each one?
Different analysis for each one, correct.
Okay. So you're... All right, go ahead.
Sure. They were further correct in not ordering the remand, as the department's proofs would remain inadequate. Mainly, this is principled basically upon the medical issue that we're dealing with here.
How do we know it would be inadequate until such testimony is offered?
Well, Dr. Saperstein was the only toxicologist that supplied testimony at the OL hearing. His testimony said that this issue was...
So I get that, but as I understand your adversary's position, if the judge had not erred procedurally and admitted in the medical evidence, they would have then brought in a custodian of record or maybe some other expert in order to make their point. So they're basically saying that they were lulled by a procedural error of the trial judge, and therefore there should be a remand on that basis. It's not an absence of evidence in the case. It's a procedural error by the trial court. How do you respond?
Well, even if it went back, my position would be, and our position is, that Dr. Saperstein, he initiated that this screening, this immunoassay test, is a screening test and needs to be followed up with a confirmation test, such as the mass spectrometry test or the I can't think of the other test off the top of my head, Judge, but it needs a confirmation test to support the ultimate finding from the screening aspect. It's there to rule in the presence of drugs.
So you want us to rule on the merits of the admissibility of the evidence now as opposed to whether it should go back to allow that to be determined?
Well, I suppose, Judge, Your Honorable Judge, that...
Do you have support for that?
For the remand issue, I believe in State v. Gilmore, it is something that was addressed, at least in Judge Clifford's dissenting opinion, where he kind of goes over the history of the case. It was a peremptory challenge case that was actually handled by Stephen Kafowitz, who did the brief on this particular issue as well. But I guess my position is there, Judge, respectfully, that even if it is remanded, the AG guidelines, the rules and regulations from the city's, they were calling for confirmation tests, and they just were absent here, and that's never going to change.
Tell us why they shouldn't have a chance. Tell us the legal basis why they shouldn't have a chance to present this on remand.
Sure. We're talking about an officer's job, his life, his livelihood. He's been out of work now for about 4 years. To me, it would be a shame if his life and livelihood and his job opportunities are tarnished and taken away.
These are pretty serious allegations, though. If it is, if they are in fact true, considering he's a police officer, so it's not just his job at stake; it's the citizenry that he protects that's at stake here. So these are pretty serious allegations.
Yes, Judge, they're 100% very serious allegations.
When you say it's his life too, but there's a lot more at stake here, isn't there?
Yeah, I agree. There is a lot at stake here, Judge. It certainly is. But once again, the issue is the testing was done. It was the testing that was done. You can't go back. You can't do a retest. You can't go and comply with the AG guidelines. You can't go back and conform.
You're giving us all the reasons why on a remand you will win the case. So are you afraid of a remand?
I hate to put my client through these additional years.
If you win, he's going to get paid for all that time.
I understand that, Judge.
If the appellate division had ordered a remand, would that have been an inappropriate remedy?
I think it would have been clearer if they decided to include the portions that I'm arguing here in their written opinion, but unfortunately that's not the case, Judge.
But a different question. I'm sorry, it wasn't clear. If the end of the appellate division opinion said we are remanding for further development of the record, would that have been an inappropriate remedy for an appellate court to undertake in the setting of your case?
I don't think it would have been the right remedy, Judge. I don't think it would have
been. But it would be something the appellate division had the discretion to do.
I believe they have. I think the case law would say that they have discretion to do that. But for these facts here, they are unique. When the fact is that there's no evidence that can come forward in regards to these additional tests that would support the argument. Yes, Judge.
What if, and I think counsel was arguing this or trying to argue this, everybody's talking about what Dr. Saperstein said. And let me start out by saying procedurally, was there a motion to dismiss the charges when the municipality offered the medical records and the statement of the other officer?
I do not believe so, Judge.
Okay. So we can't sit here and say that evidence was closed after the two documents were offered. Evidence was still open, and the ALJ considered the doctor's testimony, correct?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. My second question is, if they're right, and this confirmatory test that Dr. Saperstein says needs to be conducted for whatever reason, after they've got a reason to believe there's illegal substances in the bloodstream, in the urine stream, bloodstream, and it couldn't be done at that time because he'd been out of commission for so long. That's what their contention is. Even at that point, they could not have done those confirmatory tests. Don't we need to hear all that evidence before? Don't we need to have all that evidence heard by the ALJ and make a decision? Exactly what every other justice is suggesting. None of that evidence is in the record. None of that evidence has come in. How do we make a decision without all of that evidence being fleshed out?
That is a good question, Judge.
Thank you.
He'll be insufferable.
This first one, by the way.
Well, I like being the target. Thank you. Anyway, for this particular case, no witness was proffered by them in regards to hospital records. They didn't even go out and get their own toxicologist. They were aware that we had an expert that was testifying to these issues, and they never did that. So I would say that that would be just patently unfair to my client to go back and try to rehash these issues.
Nobody moved to dismiss. Everybody agreed Saperstein's coming in. Everybody agreed they're going to have all his evidence. He issues a report. It's a really detailed, long report. Everybody knows what he's going to say. Why do they now have an obligation to put additional evidence in addition to the evidence that's before the ALJ, not objected to, no motion to dismiss?
Well,
so what?
Generally speaking, Justice, in regards to the motion to dismiss, usually there are briefing schedules that need to be done with the OAL. I know witnesses are usually provided only about 10 to 20 days before the time of trial. My understanding in this case that has lapsed, and there was, the motion filing is already precluded at that point in time when the witness list were presented. That being said, I don't know if we were even able, as a matter of procedure, to file for that type of application at that point in time, Judge.
You're referring to motions to dismiss in limine. A motion to dismiss during the trial can't be put on a schedule because no one's aware of that. So when you talk about this briefing schedule, those are motions in limine to dismiss, not motions raised at the time of trial for failure of a party to provide evidence or to call a witness. They can't possibly be scheduled ahead of time.
That's correct, Judge.
And that's, I think, what Justice Solomon was talking about during the trial.
I apologize if I was answering the question, Judge.
What happened here is the judge decided evidence could come in. If the judge had said, I don't find an adequate foundation, objection sustained, we would have proceeded and Union City would have come forward with strong evidence or weak evidence and allowed the case to go forward. That would not have been unfair, correct?
At this juncture, I do. I think those witnesses should have been disclosed earlier in the matter. At least at that point, I'm not sure that it would have qualified as coming in as a rebuttal witness or anything of that nature. He was already working.
Do you think at the trial level that they would have been barred under some theory from attempting to lay the foundation for this evidence by calling witness?
At that stage, I'm not sure it would qualify as a rebuttal witness, though, Judge.
It's not rebuttal witness. It would still be during their case. You would object to the admission. And then they would say, okay, we're gonna bring in the custodian of records, and maybe we'll bring in a chemist, too. Was that a problem?
Well,
could you have objected?
I'm sure we would have, but I'm not sure
we would have. Could you have kept that out? Could you have stopped that from taking forward?
Probably not, Judge.
Anything you'd like to add to your presentation?
Just want to highlight the one last salient point in regards to the AG guidelines that do also require the confirmation test, as well as the own rules and regs from their own department, which requires two sets of confirmation tests as well as the initial screening. That is it, though. Thank you, judges.
Thank you. Mr. Giuliano, did you want to offer a rebuttal?
Briefly.
Okay.
The AG guidelines don't apply here. That's what the administrative law judge found. This wasn't a reasonable, sufficient drug test. The city didn't order him in. He was tested as part of a medical emergency, and to hold the city responsible for having to do some confirmation test that it couldn't do given his medical condition is essentially to say, because he had a medical emergency and that's how the city found out, he gets away with it. And that's not what we contemplate when we talk about police officers and illegal drug use and the consequences on the public. That's not a fair result.
If the question is whether there should be a remand here, do we need to make a determination about the AG guidelines?
Administrative law judge, I'm sorry.
If the question before this court now is whether to remand, do we need to address the AG guidelines?
No. No, I think that the appellate division made no comment on whether the test was appropriate, whether it was reliable, whether it was trustworthy. But as I understand my adversary's argument, it's that the city didn't do all of these other things, so why remand it? It's not going to come out any different. And I just want to highlight for the court that that's not the case at all. You talk about reliability, and Dr. Saperstein specifically testified, I have no problem with the reliability of the test. I'm not here to refute its reliability. I accept the reliability with respect to cocaine determinations. Those are exact quotes. Those are exact quotes from his testimony. So to frame this issue as if the test wasn't reliable, so if it's remanded, the outcome won't be any different, is just not borne out by the record. And I think that in a case like this where we have a unique factual circumstance where an officer was tested, the test was to save his life, the test was for his benefit, And I think that it can be properly considered if it's properly admitted, and the remand is the appropriate remedy in this type of a situation.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement.